the start of another season, the start of the first Tripe Supper in a little while. We keep saying that we're going to get into a routine of doing them once a week, but then we invariably don't follow that up. But we have just said, Phil, before we started this one, that we will get back into a routine of doing them once a week again.
Yeah, well, I think once a year is a pretty impressive record so far, isn't it? So, yeah, we should be able to manage that.
So, yeah, thanks for joining us. It's myself, Dom, Sean, Phil, Tallentire, Anthony Vickers is away. He's back for the trip to Luton on Friday night, and we'll talk about that in a bit, Phil, but first of all, we'll look back at the summer. I think it's the first podcast we've done, since Woodgate's unveiling. A fair bit's happened since then. Three signings, if you count Thomas Mahias, and a few friendlies. You went to Austria, I went to Heidenheim, Borough played well at Salford. And then I thought they were impressive against St Etienne on Sunday. I thought that was the first time against a decent team. They play Newcastle on Saturday, don't it? It'd be nice to see them. Give Newcastle a good hard in there at St James's Park. That'll be an occasion of celebration, not at St James's, won't it?
I've just noticed
rolling out the red carpet for Steve Bruce.
I've just noticed that apparently that aren't tickets £10 in advance, but £20 on the day.
I'd seen that.
So they doubled the price. So yeah. That's gonna, as one fan said, that's gonna attract them in. But yeah, that should be interesting. No, I think I took a lot from the St Etienne performance actually, because. All right, I know it's a friendly, and I know, you know, you really don't truly judge a team until it gets competitive, do you? But they're a decent side. Technically, they were good, and there were a couple of moments when I thought they might catch Burr out on the break. But ultimately, it was a really sound performance. You know, there's still some positions to fill, as we know. But, you know, there are plenty of positives to take out this summer. You know, a lot of people talking about Hayden Coulson, and he's done well, and Patrick Redding, he's done well. You know, and then we've seen, you know, somebody like Lewis Wing, as soon as he's come back into the team, for me, he's made an impact. I thought he was good against San at the end. You know, his
made
goal,
a difference,
yeah, he did. And he looks like now a mature senior pro, which when you think he's only, 3 years into his professional career, it's a really impressive thing to say. And he's still very, very, very young in terms of match experience, if not years. You know, it's. The big question was always going to be how Jonathan Woodgate, you know, adapted from being a coach to a manager. And I think we both agree that he kind of laid down a marker at his press conference, didn't he? He sat there, he was very confident, he even had a joke at the chairman's expense. He got tucked into those press lads who turned up 5 minutes late and said, you know, if you're late for my press conferences, you won't, you know, I won't wait for you. I'll start without you.
And was he right on time?
He was right on time, I believe.
He had to be, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, after what he said,
rocked up at 4:05.
Yeah, he was as punctual as Aitor Karanka used to be. So I think all those signs, you know,
and he sat down,
which was very refreshing. It was very refreshing.
My arm had been, the dictaphone had been your arm. Thankfully, you used to be able to put it on a desk. If not, the lactic acid would be laced through your arms if you're holding it up for Pulis for those.
I mean, you've got
for those 2 minutes we used to get with him on a Friday.
I mean, the change is phenomenal, isn't it? You've gone from a young manager starting out, you know, 39, relatively inexperienced coach, even Woody would, you know, he'd have to say. You know, we've got that from, you know, a manager in his 60s, very set in his ways, very experienced, you would have to say, successful, you know, a qualified success at most places he's been. You can't deny he did a good job at Crystal Palace and at Stoke, for example. But it felt like, you know, that in some respects it felt like old ideas being regurgitated, you know. I don't think we ever saw, without revisiting the Pulis, though, I don't think we ever saw a true Tony Pulis team. Not the team that I would associate with Tony Pulis. It was a fudge. It was neither, not, you know, it was neither fish nor fowl. It was neither direct or, you know, potent at one end. And although defensively it was pretty good. I think with Woody, what we're getting is now a completely different focus. You know, I mean, you were at the press conference as I was, and he's tried, hasn't he? Every time he's spoken, about to stress that it's all about the way his team plays. It's about playing on the front foot, high press. Although he does say, he's kind of said the last couple of weeks, you know, I'll play it out from the back when I can. People seem to be getting obsessed about that. I mean, I don't know how you see it, but the big question is how that transmits into live matches, into competitive matches.
I think the thing that struck me was. Although he's making a change, he's making changes that the players will embrace. The players, so for example, a lot was made about the fact that the balls were out on day three of pre-season, where he said, you know, that's what they want to do. They yeah. want to play with the balls. So it's, although it's something new, it's something that was always going to be yeah. welcomed by the players. And I think the same with the kind of style of football he's wanting to play. I think it also makes it also helps that his coaching team want to play exactly the same way. I was talking to Rob Law from BBC Tees this week, and he was pitch side for the St Etienne game, and he said the thing that struck me was how vocal and hands-on Robbie Keane was. Because it struck me that Leo maybe took a bit of a step back compared to what he used to be like. I mean, that might change if you get a referee making a decision that yeah. he's not best pleased with. But he was certainly not at the forefront of things like he was at times under Karanka. But Rob said with Keane, he was straight out, made it absolutely clear what his point was. The example he'd used me, and I'm sure Rob won't mind me saying, is Marcus Tavernier had collected the ball and once on attack, and it hadn't quite worked out. So then Keane had made the point to, you know, collect the ball already on the front foot, and then you're already kind of away and moving forward. And sure enough, the next time Tav collected the ball, it resulted in a chance or a shot on goal. I said the same with Adam Clayton. And I think, you know, Tony Pulis often, it struck me that, you know, I think it was his first press conference after the whatever game it was. Villa at home, was it? Not the Bolton game, but the first game he was in charge.
Yeah, 1-0 defeat, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he'd said, I want my midfielders to move forward. The problem was, his midfielders were moving, even if his midfielders moving forward with the ball, where do they go?
Yeah.
Where's the target? You know, who are they actually giving the ball to? And I think the thing that struck me this year is you're going to have, if Clayton's getting the ball, for example, he's going to have two midfielders in front of him, three forwards in front of him, and the likelihood is two full backs in front of him as well. I mean, for the attacking players, for the likes of Brita Sambalonga, it must be a breath of fresh air to be part of this team after 18 months. And again, you know, Pulis's way has been successful, so who are we to say there's a right and a wrong way of doing things? I just think this season, from the fans' point of view and from the players' point of view, it'll be a lot more enjoyable.
I think you know, we could as we say, we could pick plenty of faults in the very short Pulis era that it turned out to be. I think the important point, building on what you've just said there, is that I think Woody wants to empower the players to take away the fear that if you make a mistake doing something positive, he isn't going to chew you up about it. You know, you're not going to get chewed out for trying something that's going to potentially, you know, that if it had come off, it would have led to a goal scoring opportunity. I think a lot of around, you know, whether or not you like Tony Pulis's football or not, it felt like the old way. You know, we saw teams succeed last season, and Woody made that point. I thought it was one of the most important points he made in his first press conference as head coach was, you know, the way the teams that have succeeded have been playing a certain type of way. You know, he name checked Villa, didn't he, and Leeds and Norwich, and the teams playing on the front foot and looking to attack. And I think too much about the Pulis era was what players couldn't do. You know, you had a situation where basically for his first 6 months in charge, it was get the ball to Adama and go forward that way. And that was, there was plan A and there was no plan B, plan C. That was it. It was get to the ball. We all heard the shouts from the touchline, didn't we? It hit Adama, hit Adama. And that tells you that he only really trusted Adama to make the breakthrough. You know, you can't help but think that, as you say, the players must be excited about, you know, the way they're going to play this season, and the fact that, you know, we've already seen, you know, whoever's playing up front being supported. I know it sounds really daft, but how often last season did we see, you know, poor Jordan Hugel, literally the only man in the final 40 yards of the pitch, just trying to hold the ball up, surrounded by five or six opposing players, waiting an absolute age. I forget which match it was. I think we've all referenced it.
Where he just crossed it.
Yeah, he had the ball on the right-hand side, didn't he? And there was literally nobody to hit. And that doesn't happen by accident. That is because the players have been presumably told to play a certain way and a certain tactic. And the lack of, and this is what I'm going to be interested to see as well. You know, and Woody said it himself, it's all right talking, it's about how you do in the competitive matches. I want to see how Borough play against teams that we, in brackets, expect to beat at the Riverside. So last season, Millwall came to the Riverside. They've been struggling. And within 20 minutes, they felt they had a chance of getting a result against Borough when they should have had no right to expect that, because Borough just sat back and were so timid, weren't they? In a similar fixture this season, I'd be interested to see how Borough play. I felt the same with Strachan very much, that he's kind of killed the crowd in the first 15, 20 minutes at the Riverside. You'd see the ball get bogged down. Attendances weren't that great to start with. And you knew after 20 minutes, you were in for a pretty dour 90 minutes. So, you know, I mean, I think ultimately, you know, what he says, you'll be judged on results. And I don't think, if I'm being honest, I don't think anybody really can honestly accurately assess where this team may finish.
It was interesting, I thought, he said it a couple of times, where he's almost kind of asked the question of himself, where he's saying, you know, this is the way I want to play. And he's asked the question of himself, you know, if I continue to be brave, I think he knows there'll come a time this season when, you know, results aren't going to plan, because every team has a bad spell, regardless of where you are in the division. And if you lose two or three games and you've got, I don't know, say Derby away, well, are you bold enough then to go there and to still think, right, we're gonna go for this? But then equally, you know, he's already admitted that there needs to be a balance struck. It's not going to be gung-ho. I think that's been the most difficult thing to assess in the summer, in that Borough have looked shaky at the back. At Heidenheim, they were dreadful. At Salford, they had a 10-15 minute spell after falling behind when they looked very, very questionable. But we haven't seen anywhere near the first choice back line. I mean, if you're gonna name the defence now, Randolph's gonna be in goal, but he hasn't played since Gateshead. Right back, Housen or whoever comes in.
Yeah.
Centre halves, Dale's gonna be your first choice, isn't he?
And then it looks like it.
I'd be inclined to go George alongside him.
Danny and George.
Danny or George, yeah.
I think Danny will start.
Do you?
Yeah.
So yeah, first choice. Because I think Friend is likely to play.
Yeah.
And I just think Coulson has looked that impressive. Plus they've brought Bowler in. I think they're likely
to play generally here rather than, I'm talking generally here rather than Luton.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But in any case, he hasn't been able to name anything like his back choice, his first choice.
You could argue that there could be four or five regulars next season who have barely kicked a ball for this season.
Yeah.
You know.
I think it's interesting looking at the team at Luton, because if you were picking now, he says he knows his team. He told you he knows he's starting 11.
Yeah.
Right? Housen will start, Ayala will start, Wing will start, Osombolongo will start.
Shotton?
Well, then, yeah, I mean, I think the question marks are Shotton or Friend. I mean, it'd be a gamble to put George in.
I think so. After having a little bit of football for the 23s.
Everything suggests he's going to play Coulson over Bowler.
I would have thought George would have had 20 minutes against Sanet again if he was going to play this week. But then again, what do we know?
I'd had a chat with him beforehand, and he said he was fine, that he's going to be fine for Luton. So they'll know. I think it's two out of the three of Clayton, Savile and McNair. I think he'll go Clayton and McNair. McNair wing. Osombolongo, Brown off one side, and then off the other side, you're looking at Fletcher, Tav or Johnson.
Johnson's got a chance.
I think Johnson's, from what I've seen, Johnson's looked the best in pre-season, but I think he's least likely to start.
Well, here's an interesting one for you. I mean, just first of all, at a tangent to what you've just said, I'm not sure I've seen enough yet from Savile and McNair. I haven't been particularly impressed with that. They haven't caught the eye as yet in pre-season. Who knows? The fact that we haven't still seen the huge amount of McNair, have we?
No.
But the other thing was...
Borough played without Clayton at Heidenheim, and they missed him.
Yeah.
Because they just got...
Yeah. And interestingly, Woody's tried a few different options in that sort of central holding midfield position. I think the other curious thing is that the players that we maybe were bigging up as the likely ones to really fly this summer under the Woody's plan to play the kids, if you want to put it like that, haven't necessarily been the ones that have emerged. So we thought probably Jed Spence would have a great chance to nail down right back. I don't think that's happened. I don't think Tabwood, if he's pan on heart, has really ripped it up so far. And they're the kind of two that I was particularly expecting to break through.
Conor Malley is another one who's been talked about a lot. Yeah. The problem is there's that many
it's such a busy him, and I know they've got huge hopes for people like Coulson and Malley. I was going to call him McNally there. Malley,
Coulson's a surprise, really. I mean, he went on loan to St Mirren last year, didn't work for him. I think I'm right in saying St Mirren changed the manager pretty early doors, and obviously it didn't work out, but I mean he looks ready.
Well, it's interesting that what he said when he spoke about him again at his press conference, he's going places, you know, and he did stress a couple of times, it's about what you do when the action starts for real. And I think there's a lot in that. I think we've seen over the years lots of young players catching the eye in pre-season and then either haven't been lucky enough to get the opportunity, or maybe it's when they've got the opportunity, it's been just a little bit too much too soon. I mean, Woody himself, of course, was given the opportunity at 18, was playing for England at 19, but then he's an exception because he was, in my view, a world-class defender at, yeah, at his best. And it was interesting, yesterday also he talked about, you know, people are getting hung up on the idea of the kids playing, and he's pleased about that. But he also stressed when he was asked about, you know, does the situation compare to what you had at Leeds when that generation came through under O'Leary? And he said, you can't compare the two. He's made the point that you can't compare the the Harry Kewells who came through at that time and himself and Paul Robinson. You know, you had five or six players coming through at Leeds, a bit like he did with Man United under the Beckham era, that became full-time senior pros at a high level and quite a lot of them went on to play for the countries. I don't think anyone's saying that this current crop of Borough youngsters is exceptional. What we're saying is they're good players who, if they're given a chance, could emerge as decent first team professionals, and any club would be pleased with that scenario.
What's a good season for Borough this year? Because Woodgate said yesterday, I think we'll be successful. What is successful this season?
I think it's really difficult. I mean, we've just done our prediction. I did a prediction for one of our group pre-season previews, and I toyed with putting Borough in one of my three promoted. Probably the reason I didn't was because I tipped them every year and Borough have won promotion once out of 10 seasons. Look how that worked out. So, but I think most fans have. You spoke to a Borough fan in the pub, heart to heart. You know, do you think Borough are going to finish in the top three, either automatic or win through the playoffs? I think most would probably say it'd be a stretch because of what we've seen. The team fell short last season. We still don't know who's coming in yet. There's three or four signings still to make, so we might have a better chance of making an educated guess a week's time when the window closes. I think a successful season would be, first of all, to play the brand of football the fans have been crying out for. Now, no one's going to say that Borough are going to play, you know, like Barcelona at the peak. But what they just want to see, as Woody described it, a team having a go at the play. He said,
goals?
He said in his... Yeah.
There was just no goals. Yeah.
He said, he's a Borough fan. He said, if Borough fans see a team giving everything for the shirt, leaving everything out there on the pitch, giving their all, putting everything in, they'll take that. And I think he's right. I think what they want to see is a team having a go. And I mentioned the Millwall game before, and there were other examples last season where Borough were just ridiculously tentative. For a team that was trumpeted as potential automatic promotion favourites, weren't they?
They looked scared of themselves.
You could see the confidence dripping away as the season went on. And that's maybe because there was too much focus on what those players couldn't do instead of what they could do. Just to answer your question, I think if the football's good at home particularly, we get a few standout wins, really, you know, they get people coming out the riverside absolutely buzzing, you know, the noise in the underpass is great because everyone's buzzing about the performance. And I think if Borough can finish, would you say top 8, top 10?
Yeah.
I think what's interesting, you touched on it before about, you know, this, when Borough hit a bad patch, what we don't know is how the fans will react. I couldn't predict it, and I don't think anyone can. We think that a lot of fans have bought into what Woody wants to do, but there will be those fans out there who weren't happy about the appointment in the first place. There's always a section of fans who are going to get frustrated at home performances that aren't as good as you expect, and I understand that. We all pay our, you know, they pay the money, and they just, you know, they have a right to that opinion. If the fans stay behind the team when they have a blip, then I think it could be, you know, if they get on the case of the players, that might, you know, when they're trying different things and they're trying to be adventurous and they go within themselves and they go in their own shell a little bit, then it's, that would be a worry. But I think it's certainly possible for Borough to have a dip at the top six.
I think. In terms of, I know this is the cop-out, but in terms of the league prediction, it is just so impossible to say, because you'd look at the team and think, you know, well, they're a bit short there and they haven't got the depth there. But then you would have said the same about Norwich and Sheffield United and other teams that were knocking on the door. I think the key thing this year is the direction, because if you look at the last couple of seasons, Monk, obviously everyone knew what the plan was. to storm the division, and they backed it up with the transfer with the signings they'd made. But week to week, you couldn't tap into what Monk was trying to do.
No.
Now with Pulis, you could, but it was so short term, wasn't it? Because there was no way that fans were going to invest in another season of that. Genuinely, you know, close mates of mine who were diehard fans go home and away, and I know some who didn't want Borough to go up at risk of purely staying and seeing another season of that. But you know when you're paying that much money to leave the game so bored and so frustrated, you can understand, you know, kind of the that line of thinking. I think this season you looked at Norwich, and did they finish 16th the season before last?
I think it was 15-16, something like that.
Now I'm not saying that
I think it was 15 leagues or 14th were.
Yeah, I'm not saying
like
15th to 16th would be a good season, but I think this year a couple of new signings made, if they play the right way and the right noises come out of the club, which I think there have been since. Mm. I think Woodgate, as you know, we talked there about a lot of fans who were unsure about his appointment. I think he changed the mind of a lot of fans with that kind of unveiling and with his first press conference. There's a massive spider in the corner there. It's in your office as well. You didn't get that upstairs. I think he changed the mind of a lot of fans. And I think if the right noises continue to come out, and I think the key is to give the fans something to tap into. So, you know, really, Borough's target when they've tried to win promotion in recent seasons has always been a here and now, even with iTalk around. You know, it was a kind of a short term target. I think the difference this year is it might be a mid, you know, they might be looking at things not as a long term goal but mid term goals and kind of working towards that. I think if fans can see that, it's easy to tap into, isn't it?
Yeah, I get the feeling at the moment that everybody connected with Borough at a coaching, managerial and executive level are all on the same page.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got a chairman who isn't going to panic if Borough have three defeats on the spin in November. He's, you know, he's invested in Woody. He's backing him up, you know, in terms of, you know, it was his choice. He stuck his neck on the line to appoint him. And I'm sure, barring an absolute disaster, we'll get this season no matter what. And we'll find out, you know, it's all, as you say, everything's about short-termism in, you know, in football. Look at Nottingham Forest last season, they went through Karanka, they went, got Martin O'Neill's out, nearly called him Gary O'Neill there. You know, you can't build a club when, you know, and Borough have had that problem as well. You know, we have jerked from one style of a manager to another. You know, you had the Karanka, Agnew, Monk, Pulis. You know, four managers in the best, what was it, in no time.
It's very un-Borough, that.
It is very un-Borough, and they've been good at being, you know, the stability's been there in the past. And not only was that un-Borough, I think some of the... Gary Monk didn't feel like the right fit for Middlesbrough. Tony Pulis, you felt he was coming in and doing a short-term job, didn't you, you know?
I mean, this we were Pulis, because at the start... I thought he did get the area, he got the area,
he got what the people were about,
and the things he was saying at the start. But there were some things he was saying towards the end of his tenure where you honestly thought he was trolling the fans.
Yeah, he was, you know, he was a strange one. And that's why I think Borough need to get back to get their identity back and know what they are. And I think, you know, I've just been writing a piece talking about, you know, Borough really, from the start of Steve Gibson's chairmanship, were a spend to succeed type of club. You know, they knew they had to spend over the odds to get players in because we're not sexy, we're not Man United, we're not Liverpool. And that model ultimately led to a huge amount of relative success. You know, you look around the boardroom at Borough and there's pictures from Eindhoven and there's pictures from Wembley, there's Nigel Pearson leading the team out, there's pictures from Cardiff. And when you compare that short period to the rest of Borough's history, it's you know, it's incredible, really, what they achieved. But the game's moved on. The game's moved on so much, even from just 2006. We're seeing now the different type of owners that have come into football, the amount of money that's floating around in football. And Borough will never be able to compete at the top table financially anymore unless we get someone like Man City's owners. So there has to be a different model. And I think you look at the success, again, relative success of a Bournemouth, of a Watford, of a Norwich even, of clubs that, you know, either Borough size or even smaller in some respects, a Burnley definitely smaller club in terms of size of town, if not trophies. And you see those clubs, their model works, and it's not perfect. I'm not saying their models are ideal, but they found a way of competing, punching above their weight, and staying in the Premier League, and that's something Borough haven't been able to do since the 2009, following relegation. And so I think this new model Borough, if you want to call it that, is going to take time to bed in. You know, we as journalists are going to have to get used to the idea that Borough aren't going to be throwing money around willy nilly. I think the fans are going to have to get used to that we're not going to. And I think I think the fans are sick of seeing players coming in for big money that just aren't delivering the goods.
Well, on that subject, we spoke to Marcus Brown after the game against San Etienne last week. And I know, players can trot out the same old lines when they sign, and you have to be kind of careful to get overly excited and to tap into it too much. But he struck me as a very genuine lad. And the thing that struck me more than anything was, there's a 21-year-old kid who's got loads of options. He's been at West Ham since he was 7. So first of all, that's a mature step, a big step to leave the club that you've supported in the area you live. I know it's League One, but he could have gone to Oxford down the road, where he'd have been in his comfort zone. He was last year. He said he had loads of offers to come to Middlesbrough. You know, that is completely out of his comfort zone. You heard Pulis, for example, last year talking about George Savile, how it's such a big step for a young lad, kind of, who's been used to living in the capital and moving up to the northeast. And Brown talked about going out for a coffee in Yarm on the Saturday and being struck by the welcome. And I think that is probably more promising than what he was saying about tapping into the football side of things. Yeah. Because if you keep him happy off the pitch, then, you know, with everything we're hearing from Woodgate and the fact he's going to cater for these attacking players, then you would hope you're going to get the best out of him on it. I do think, you know, with a couple of signings they've made so far, it does tap into what Pulis was saying last year about signing players that genuinely want to be here for the right reasons. Martin Braithwaite is
the classic example.
Yeah, of how things go tits up, isn't it?
Yeah,
when you sign a player like that, and I could tell what Woodgate was trying to do at the start of the summer when he was talking about how, you know, he's got a key role to play, but I do feel like he's got away with it a little, Braithwaite, having left. But there's, you've seen his tweet last week.
I think it's just the lack of sort of
awareness.
Self-awareness. I mean, it's interesting because you touch on the Brown signing, and it's really, you compare that to, he's a very similar player in terms of age and record as a player, stats as a Fletcher when he arrived.
The difference is
the transfer fee.
Oh, I mean, Fletcher's been a victim of that fee.
And also Marvin
Johnson
as well. You know, Borough were looking to make those kind of signings to an extent a couple of years ago, but because they were seen as a club that can afford to pay £15 million for Britta Sombalonga, and £9 million for Martin Braithwaite, the price tag was just phenomenal. I can't believe that, I don't know how much Borough played for Brown. I don't think it's less than a million, isn't it? Certainly.
The suggestions from West Ham were, Sam Minkasol, who covers West Ham for Football London, I think he'd reported it was 200,000 or 300,000. And
you're
the
looking at 20
from
times,
West Ham fans were that, why the hell have we let him go for that price?
And you think, it's cost, Fletcher cost 20 times more. That's not Fletcher's fault. He didn't set the transfer.
And he has been a victim of that.
Yeah, he's been a huge victim. And I think everyone would accept that Borough overpaid. And whether he's a good player or he's not a good player, he can't dictate what his transfer fee is. And he might come good this season. There were signs last season that he was, starting to come to terms with playing for Middlesbrough. I just think everything about the way Borough's going, and I'm saying this obviously before with a ball's being kicked in anger, feels right. It just feels right. It feels right that Borough aren't paying, bringing in players who don't want to be here for £9 million, and paying £7 million for 21-year-old players who've scored, 7 or 8 goals in for Barnsley. I think this, if you're bringing players who are on the up, we've seen, Bristol City time and again Brentford time and again, bringing in players who are young and hungry, and making if they have to leave, they make a fortune. We as football fans shouldn't get too angry if a player comes and does really well for us for 2 or 3 years, whether you're a Borough fan or a Brentford fan or whatever, and he's sold on at a big profit, because then you think, okay, we've got 3 good years out of that player, and yeah, if he goes on and does really well for Man United, well, good luck to him. We'll get the next Marcus Brown or whoever it happens to be, and we'll get him again. We'll get him for £500,000 or and hopefully by then anyway, Borough in the Premier League and can compete at a slightly different level.
But you mentioned Fletcher there. If you're the type to buy into squad numbers and read into them, which I am. Fletcher has moved from 18, I think it is, to 11. The thing that struck me, I like the idea of Dale Fry as a six. Yeah. He looks like a six.
He's a six all day long.
A commanding defender who can step out of the defence. Yeah, that's the ball got six out. Written all over it. That John Obi Mikel is a two.
I never liked a midfielder with a six on his back. I never liked that.
No. I don't mind it.
No,
for me it's good.
It's five and six all day long.
When I was playing TGFA for Martin Hall Drive, I was a centre midfielder. And if I come across a six midfielder, the chances are he was a hard-hitting midfielder. You don't get a ball playing number six.
No, number 10. That's a number 10, isn't it? A number seven, possibly.
Yeah. Tavernier as seven struck me. Again, you might accuse me of reading too much into things. I think that's a big pat on the back for Tav. You know, seven, that is, there's no doubt that is an indication to say, look, you are a big part of my plans.
I think he is. I think if you said to Woody now, will Tav be involved next season a lot, he'd say, yeah, I hope so.
It's a big season for him, isn't it?
I think it is. He's gone from being kind of the player on the fringes who's been coming off the bench a lot. I mean, he was involved in more games than people would probably realise last season. When you look at the stats.
Nowhere near as many as he should have been.
No, probably not. No, you think when Borough were crying out for width and pace, particularly down the left,
just
you give him a go. Yeah, you give him a go. And I think the difference is now that, you know, if he starts a few games on the bounce, and it's a difficult position out there wide. You know yourself, wide players at all levels find it hard because of the first, you know, it's one of the hardest positions to be consistently successful in. It won't be easy, but, you know, he's never going to get a better opportunity to play regular Championship football if he catches the eye. Obviously, we've got to see more transfers coming in.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that. This has been recorded Thursday afternoon, early Thursday afternoon, so there might well have been some movement by the time this goes out, but a full back with a cover at right back still needed. Yeah. They still look short in attacking midfield. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And a centre forward, I mean, you think, you know, if Britt was to get injured.
That's a worry, isn't it?
In the first couple of weeks of the season, yeah. They're left with Gusted and on Fletcher.
I think the really successful teams tend to be in the Championship the ones that have got some real creativity in the middle of the pitch. And that's not to sort of, you know, discredit the players that Borough do have, but none of them would be regarded as kind of your old fashioned sort of creative central midfielder that can, you know, score goals and create goals. Definitely, obviously, Borough have been strongly linked with Anthony Dyke Steele, and Lee Boy's confirmed Borough have made bids. You'd think that if they sign him, he'll be the right back or a player of similar quality. I know they are wanting to strengthen up front and, as you say, a creative midfielder. And I think of all those positions that need filling, for me, you need something else, that another X factor in midfield. I mean, obviously, we don't know how Marcus Brown.
What do you think the least important is there, right back?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think it is in this day. I think if
Borough themselves short.
The thing is, if they don't get a new right back and don't get a new wide midfielder for the right side of the pitch, which we know Borough want, then that's two key areas that have gone unaddressed, isn't it? You know, who's going to play wide right? I say it's probably that part of that front three, and who's going to play it right back? And it's asking a lot of Johnny Howson to be the full time right back all season.
I was just going to say you were at the press conference on Wednesday. He was adamant that Britt and Randolph would be going nowhere.
Yeah, he's kind of said, you know, he kind of erred between very confident and 100%.
That'll do.
I mean, I think the difficulty is when you ask a manager that question, a head coach that question, every player at every level now has his price, you know. And if Borough got a really, really serious offer for Darren Randolph and knew they were able to bring in backup, then that, they'd probably do the deal, because that's the financial reality of football at every level. You know, if when Man United couldn't keep Ronaldo when they were winning titles left, right and centre. So, you know, the top clubs struggle to keep players, you know. I think that's the new financial reality, you know. I think with Brit, you'd have to have, wouldn't you, an absolute nailed-on replacement. At least one nailed-on replacement, because goals are everything in football, as we know. And he'll get goals if he can stay fit in the Championship. He'll surely get 20 goals next season if he stays fit and plays every game.
Right, we'll go for predictions. I'm writing these down as I go. We didn't even discuss this beforehand, did we?
So no.
This genuinely is going...
Free-form,
yeah,
podcasting.
We'll go Borough first, so I'll just rattle... we'll make this quick fire, so I'll just rattle a few things at you and we'll both go... I'll write them down as well.
Yeah, go on then.
And I'll get Vix on the way to Luton tomorrow so we can write them down as well. Top scorer?
Brit.
Yeah, I'll go with Brit too, so that's Brit times two. Player of the season.
Well, that's really tough, that, because...
I'm going to go Dale.
I'm going to go Brit again, because if he scores 20 goals, he'll be player of the season for me.
Yeah, I've gone Dale there, but really, you want it to be an attacking player, don't you? I've gone with
you
it.
You can't go back now. There's no coming back.
Surprise.
I'll only take your first answer.
Surprise of the season. I'm wanting you to go first.
Got
I don't
an hour,
know about myself.
Surprise of the season. Well, would... See, it's thinking who's gonna play enough games to be the surprise of the season. All right, I don't want to be here all day, so I'll say Hayden Coulson.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
But... You can say it as well.
Yeah. So you've gone Coulson. I'll tell you what, I'm going to come back to that because I want to say something different, but
yeah.
I genuinely can't think of one on the spot. So we'll go with the three promoted teams. Who did you say in the preview you did this
God,
week?
I can't remember. I think... Going on about how difficult it is to predict whether Borough will get promoted or not, it's hard, difficult to pick the promoted teams. Just off the top of my head, I think I went for Leeds. I think I went for West Brom. God, who was the third team? I've got a funny feeling Fulham won't do it this time.
Yeah, you didn't say Fulham.
No, I don't fancy Fulham. I'm not sure with Scott Parker. I don't know why that I don't fancy Scott Parker as manager. But also, I think they've got a very overloaded squad and that would be difficult to keep them satisfied, whether they'll be motivated for another Championship season. I can't remember who the third team was off the top of my head.
I've gone Cardiff. I think Warnock, I think they've got a good strong squad there, and you know, they know how
it's his last season, isn't it?
Yeah, West Brom.
Yeah,
and
I think West Brom should have enough.
I've written Brentford down it.
See,
and I don't really know why.
Bristol City.
I do like the look of Bristol City.
You know, I would like to see. I like Lee Johnson. I'd like to see if, you know, obviously we want Burnley go up. Of course we do. But if Bristol City are one of the three teams that go up, I'd be pleased to see that, because they've got a project. That, you know, they spent money on the ground. They seem to be doing things step by step rather than, you know, trying to, let's just say, you know, we've seen the financial fair play issues, haven't we? And they seem to be trying to do things the right way, let's just say it like that. So I'd like to see Bristol City. I don't think I tipped them, mind.
I think Leeds are an interesting one because they should. You know, they've obviously got the experience of last season. Bielsa's a year better off of Championship knowledge. They've strengthened the squad. But then you just wonder whether the weight of expectation will be too much for them this season.
They dropped off badly at the end of last season, didn't they? And I think that was... I think two things I noticed about them last season was the phenomenal amount of injuries. And I think, by the way, credit to Borough for the way they seem to keep most of the players on the pitch. And they have done over the last few seasons. At least injury records. And they seem to need five chances to score a goal. And they're not the greatest at the back either. And particularly with losing Pontus Janssen.
He's got Brentford. That's a funny sign.
Yeah, it's a strange sign. I noticed they've got money for Peacock Farrell. Lad who was at Borough, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was
Darlow Bourne, isn't he?
Yeah. So
Borough, I'm going for a 5th to 8th place finish for Borough this season.
That seems reasonable.
I think, you know, if they get a couple of extra players in the next week, if they keep Randolph and Asombalonga, and if they keep those players fit, I still think that's a strong team, and I think they're gonna tap into what Woodgate wants from them, and I still think they'll be there or thereabouts in the mix. I think the top two might be a bit much to ask.
Well, I think if you were had a Sheffield United podcast this time last year, or Cardiff City one a couple of years ago before the they would have sat there thinking, I can't see how we're getting promoted out of this division. I know we had a good season, like Sheffield fans have been saying, I know we had a good season in our first season back up, but that's going to take some matching. Automatic promotion. Cardiff were nowhere the season before they went up, weren't they?
No,
so,
exactly.
So, you know, there seems to be a team that comes through. I mean, I can't help thinking that Borough have been less than the sum of the parts since relegation.
I agree.
You know, we all get on the, you know, we all criticise certain players. You know, and maybe we get hung up on players, and you know, you see teams that are made up of unheralded players doing so well. Sheffield United being the case in point. You know, if Borough had gone out and signed half of Sheffield United's team at the start of last season, nobody would have sat there thinking, well, that's it, we've nailed promotion. Because they're just hard-working, honest professionals who, in the right team, can do a job. And that's all you're looking for.
Surprise of the season, I've thought one, that the surprise of the season will be we'll stick to our promise of doing a tripe every week throughout the course of the season. And if that prediction proves right at the end of the season, then we'll have done well with our gaffers. Our gaffers will be pleased.
Yeah, they will.
We'll save those predictions. I said we'd do it last year, but we didn't, mainly because I think I looked at them and mine were that far off the mark. I thought we won't bring them up again.
Well, what about the season before when surprise package in the Championship and I tipped Sunderland? So they just know how to get out of the second division.
And you weren't wrong.
Yeah, they got out of the division.
Relegation, what are we saying? I'm going to go Hull, Birmingham, Millwall, and that's just completely off the cuff.
I'd struggle to disagree with that. Certainly Birmingham, for the reasons we can all, you know, that they've lost the manager, they've got problems, they've lost some good players like Shea Adams. Birmingham sort of diced with it for a few years, and Hull again, they've lost a manager who, while I'm not a fan of him, he did a really good job last season. They're probably going to lose their best players as well, aren't they, by the looks of it. And then it's a team like Millwall. Will Barnsley have enough to stay up? They seem to have a good model.
Gaffer.
They've got a good model there as well, Barnsley. Luton, you know, one of the promoted teams, they normally get a promotion bounce, don't they?
Yeah, I think Luton are a great one. No, and I'd quite like to see them stay up. I just hope they get off to a stinker.
Well, as I'm not going to tick off Kenilworth Road this weekend, I'll have to hope to stay up for next season so I can get that one under my belt.
Indeed. Well, thanks a lot for listening. Please do follow us. Our coverage on Friday night from Kenilworth Road. We'll have the live blog as usual. Obviously, if you're watching along on Sky, then you can follow along as per, and we'll bring you all the reaction over the course of the weekend. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Phil.
Cheers, mate.